Warning, the podcast you are about to listen to may have adult language and discuss adult themes not suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.
I don't know if we have like special powers and we can sense this thing or something, but every time that we've decided in this round to do a game following a disappointing effort by one of the two teams, things end up turning around and we get to come back with you all and we don't have to be miserable and kind of get to talk about some of the good and those kinds of things that are happening. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to a playoff bonus edition of the Far End of the Bench podcast. We are live following game three of the Nuggets and Timberwolves series. My name is Jimmy Pilato. I'm here with my co-host, Nico Bryan. If you're just tuning in, joining us for the playoff content, we appreciate it. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, follow at FEOTB Pod on all social medias. Be checking out everything. We got shorts, we got TikToks, we got reels, we got long form interviews. We just had the Sarcastic Remarks podcast on Wednesday to talk a little bit about that Dallas Stars and Colorado Avalanche series. Dallas Stars Twitter is obnoxious. I'm not going to give them any other adjective other than obnoxious. You guys know how to make a point. And we're live. We're rolling. We got a lot of good things coming for this episode, Nico. And I know that you're feeling much better now that your team is back. The team is back.
Our team is back.
Our
team is back.
Should we tell the listeners? You're kind of pushing me a different direction here, Nico.
Yeah.
It's kind of mixed signals.
I know Jimmy is going to be a diehard New York Knicks fan because of DiVincenzo shortly. So I know, I'm sorry, Nuggets fans. I did not get Jimmy on the Gallinari train early enough and get him all in. And now there's one Italian motherfucker that's hooping in the NBA and he's all for the New York Knicks train. Either way, he still has a Nugget hat on, so it's our team. But yeah, look, this obviously after game one and two, we had a friend of the show, Jordan, come on and say that this is going to be a sweep, obviously. And people like Stephen A. Smith of the world saying, I hope that Minnesota finishes Denver in four so we can stop talking about them. We had people going online saying Jokic is the worst MVP again in NBA history. How does he deserve it? How does he do clutch things? And then what happens? Your MJ, right? Your next MJ comes up and does this performance at home. Game two was an absolute catastrophe. It was horrible on all fronts, but even I knew that this team was not going to respond like that. Everybody could think, you know what, this Timberwolves are four, it's cute, it's very quick, it's very funny how quickly that tune changed when it went to Wolves and four as opposed to Wolves and five. Oh wait, they're probably not going to win another home game here, so Wolves and six. Oh, but we have to win another one in Denver, so Wolves and seven. It's wild. It's very wild to me is all I'm going to say. And look, the Denver Nuggets, I'm not satisfied at all with this performance. I expected this. This was the first Denver Nuggets playoff game I've seen this entire run that I've been proud of. That accounts every single Lakers game. That accounts for obviously the first two games of the series. It's the first game this entire playoff run where I looked at this team and said, yep, that's the team that won the championship last year. Plain simple. That's the offensive pressure. That's the know your role and shut your fucking mouth. It's you know what? It's we play Denver Nuggets basketball, which is good solid defense. Play team offensive basketball. You're gonna win basketball games. That's exactly what happened tonight. And like I said, people were calling Minnesota invincible. I heard that. I saw those remarks. Saw those tweets. Heard those announcers say this thing. They're unbeatable. Guess what? You just faced adversity for the first time, and you just got your ass kicked at home. Ass kicked at home. Yeah. This is a different story. This is a 2-point win for the Nuggets.
This was a returning of the favor.
This is a different, entirely different story. This is a 2-5 point win where it's free throws in the game. No, the starters were pulled with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter for Minnesota. This was an ass kicking. Plain and simple. You gave it to us, we gave it right back. That's how it goes. And like I said, to respond like that on the road was massive because you could have lied down, right? Instead, you come in, you have that extra day of rest, which actually served to be our benefit huge, massively. Thank you to whoever concert is going on in Minnesota yesterday for postponing today's game till today. But man, I like I said, the performance I saw from a team that said, fuck you, were you giving us the underdog role again? Please go ahead. Go ahead. That's all you need to do. That's all you need to do. There's no one that puts bulletin board material up better than the Denver Nuggets. Plain and simple. And
they seem to enjoy having that. They enjoy having that chip on their shoulder. That's Michael Malone's wheelhouse.
Absolutely. And from the opening tip, Jimmy, Jamal Murray was getting his ass booed. Jamal Murray was getting his ass booed. I love it.
I want you to tell us all this. This is the type of series, and we mentioned it with Ryan too. He said it pretty well. It's no fun when you don't hate the team that you're playing against in the playoffs. Like when you have no animosity towards the fan base, if you can't come up with some reason not to like that other team, it's not as fun. I can now hate the Minnesota Timberwolves. I love Jordan. Jordan and I played college football. We went through a lot of shit together. Like you build a bond. And that guy, that's my dude. But Minnesota just, they got cocky quick. They got cocky so quick.
Jimmy, they were crowning them NBA champions. They were crowning them NBA champions. Real talk.
Well, I mean, and look at the other side too. People were saying that it was T-Wolves, Thunder, it's set, Western Conference Final. And then Dallas came back and did the same thing the Nuggets did.
Same thing that respond. Look, champions respond. Plain and simple. Obviously, there's still one more game to go in Minnesota. And like I said, I expect a much closer game, a much tighter game. And we'll talk about the preview for that game. But like I said, this is a massive win. Like I said, no team's ever come back from 3-0. But if Denver somehow, unfortunately, loses game 4, you have game 5 at home. You have game 5 at home. And what team has more 3-1 comebacks the last 4 years than anybody?
Yeah, you're looking at them. That is very nice to that's you're very, very nice to have, but that's not necessarily something that I want to rely on. Oh, I can do it for one. I can deal with it for one series, but that's going to be – this team is already definitely feeling that long championship run from last season too. Let's talk about this offense because that was the main point of contention following game 2. You put up 80 points, hadn't been able to score over 100 in the entire series up until this point, and now you're looking at 117-point explosion. What was the strategy? What adjustments were made by Michael Malone that allowed this Nuggets offense to open up and we saw them be able to put actual points on the board like we're used to seeing?
There was two major offensive adjustments that I really loved from right from the start. And the first one was, obviously, everyone knows Minnesota's suffocating defense. Tony Brothers was not having that tonight. You watched the calls on both ends. Every little tic-tac thing was called both ways. So Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Jaden McDaniels got into foul trouble quickly. Get those two in foul trouble quickly. Ants got dog in him, but they have no other defender. I will happily have Mike Conley guard Jamal Murray 1-on-1 and have Jamal cook him. Plain and simple. So you got them early in trouble. But another thing that I saw offensively was, yes, Minnesota full court pressured. The inbounder, and Jokic does this, I think, just out of habit. It's not necessarily something that he just does consistently because he just doesn't think about it. But when you pass the ball into Jamal or pass the ball into Jokic, the person who's been inbounding the ball is basically a shield. It's in another sense, it's a moving pick, basically. He walks up the floor and the ball handler basically dribbles right behind him. It's simple as that. Yeah, it sounds like fucking something from D2 My Ducks of follow the fucking leader, but it's literally that.
Flying V.
It's literally that, so that the defender has to back up. And if you decide to pick a side, Jamal runs right around you and it's a fast break. That's the one adjustment that I really, really loved. Jokic does that quite a bit during the regular season if there's pressure and trying to slow the game down. But when you have that much pressure coming up in the front court, it massively relieves Jamal's life and massively relieves Jokic's or KCP or AG sometimes bringing the ball up and slowing it down, playing in your tempo. And I really, really love that because when you got to that, then you got into the half-court offense, you were able to relax, you were able to move the ball, you were able to get the guys open shots where they needed to. There was multiple possessions. I remember this specifically, it was either beginning of third or the end of the second quarter where that KCP drive to Jokic and hit out to Jamal Murray wide open three. It was – everyone touched the ball at least twice in that momentum, in that movement, and you could see just the utter defeat of Minnesota and be like, fuck, we just played great rotational defense and we were missing one person and Jamal gets a wide open three and hits it. Things like that are just so demoralizing offensively where, like I said, there's guys all across this floor can score. Jokic, we already know. Jamal Murray, killer tonight. Absolutely killer.
That's something that we can bring up because I have those stats right at hand. So I have the Denver leading scorers scrolling, and here's the Minnesota leading scorers.
And then we – 19 points. That's fucking crazy to me, 19 points. Either way, you hold him under 20, that's huge. But Jamal, we know he's killed. Michael Porter Jr., we know he can hit a knockdown three. Sometimes he makes stupid decisions, don't get me wrong. I still hate him for some of the shots he takes, but he hits them. He hits them. KCP, obviously a deadly shooter. One person tonight that hit three threes right in a row in the third quarter and killed any sort of momentum Minnesota tried to have coming out of halftime was Aaron fucking Gordon. Aaron Gordon. Look, Aaron Gordon is not going to be getting the alley-oops this series. He's not going to be getting those easy looks. When you play a two big man lineup and what Minnesota is doing with the Gobert and safe free safety position, you are forced to have to step outside. Because if you're hitting threes, if you're making Gobert step out on the three, that opens the lane so open. We've seen it, right? Jamal went after Kyle. First, the second Gobert stopped off the floor, Jamal went right at Kyle Anderson in the plate in the paint and got a layup, right? If you have taken the defensive player of the year off the court and out of the play, it opens everything up. And like I said, you are forced to have Gobert guard Jokic, and then that makes everyone's life so much easier because you know Jokic can take him one-on-one. So that offensive adjustment I really, really, really loved. I want and another thing that I thought was – that I saw tonight was I was waiting for eighth game now. We finally got an eight-man rotation. I love Peyton Watson. I Peyton Watson is the future of this team. He's going to be a starter eventually probably for this team. But this bench only consisted of three guys. It was Christian Brown, Reggie Jackson, and Justin Holiday, who's been lights out from three. That small adjustment, it may not seem like much. That gives Jamal more time on the floor. It gives Michael Porter Jr. more time on the floor. I've always said that if you have two of the big four always on the floor, your offense will be just fine. And the big four is Jokic, AG, MPJ, and Jamal. If you have two of those big four offensive scorers on the floor, you will produce. You will produce. And I look back at the box score, there was never a time where three of them were off the court. It was always that, and I love and we can talk about the defense now, and if you have anything on the offense, I'll let you chime in. But the offensive production was what I've seen from the Denver Nuggets this entire season, ever since Jokic stepped on the floor's team. It's ball movement, it's making the second pass, making the right move, not turning the ball over, right? Not turning the ball over.
The big thing when you hold on to the ball.
The Nuggets had more turnovers in game two than they had assists. That's never going to win a game. The Nuggets tripled their turnovers to assist ratio tonight, and that's exactly what you need. And it was glorious.
Let's move on to the defense. Anthony Edwards goes back-to-back games where he gets nearly 40, and then all of a sudden it drops down to where it's 19 points. What was the magic piece of the puzzle? And is it duplicatable to the point where you can hold him under 20 for multiple games in this series? Because if you can do that, I feel much, much better about how this series is going to go. This is still a dogfight. That's great to get a bounce back. You still have to be able to put two in a row. There's a lot that you need to have happen for you moving forward. So is this sustainable against Anthony Edwards?
It's not. The reason why Anthony Edwards was the way he was tonight was the man was forcing it. He was trying to be Steph Curry out there. Everyone, look. Plain and simple, Anthony Edwards' shooting is massively improved. Don't get me wrong. Massively improved. I will live and die with Anthony Edwards pulling up from fucking three and not going off the dribble. He is so quick off the dribble. He is so powerful when he gets in the lane. Knock yourself out and chuck threes. If you hit three threes and you don't do anything else, it doesn't draw. Don't draw fouls going to the lane. Don't take guys off dribble. Don't beat with your speed and strength. We're never going to win the series, and we'll win the next three games. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. And you look at that stat sheet. Kat had 14 points tonight. He had three threes in the second quarter. Or might have been, it was either second or third quarter, whatever it was. Second or first quarter. One of those quarters, he had three threes. He ended with 14 points. Where is your offense coming from? And Mike Conley is a guy that's a leader and a quarterback for them. They really struggled finding that secondary option, especially when Jaden McDaniels got into foul trouble because the guy was not hitting.
Well, Killer what happened to Naz Reid? Wasn't Naz Reid – that was him establishing himself
Naz Reid was not facing as many open shots as he was in game one and two.
So all of these things that I heard from Minnesota fans and how this is the death of the Nuggets and we should all just wear our black and mourn and write our obituaries now about the season that should have never been, this is all bullshit. is what I'm hearing.
It's bullshit. It's a long series. And Minnesota fans thinking this is done for, thinking that you're going to win on a home court and win in five is blasphemous. You can win the series of six. Your team is still very, very good, plain and simple. But the defensive adjustments tonight, KCP was very, very good. And then I really, really loved Christian Brown tonight. Christian Brown took over that Bruce Brown role from last year and guarding Anthony Edwards off the bench. He stepped up. He did not do much offensively. But if you look at the plus minus of when he was guarding Anthony Edwards, he was making his life hell from the moment he stepped on the court. And that was something Nikhil Alexander-Walker did with Jamal. That's what Jay McDaniels did with Michael Porter Jr. And once they got in foul trouble, they couldn't do that anymore. But Christian Brown got right in his face and said, I dare you to be me. Plain and simple. If you want to hit a three over my face, I'll clap. I'll clap my hands. Good for you. Good for you. Plain and simple, you're not beating me off the dribble. And that's the great dynamic about having KCP as opposed to Christian Brown. KCP is a little bit stronger, a little bit more lengthy. He can block more shots. That's the great defense here. Move to Christian Brown. He is sturdier, he's shorter, and he's faster. So Anthony Edwards has to face two different types of defenders on him, and that sometimes can mix up his game, and that's the great thing about throwing multiple guys at him, right? You throw AG on him, that's more powerful, right? That's the difference between Denver Nuggets, and honestly, Minnesota has this too with McDaniels, Nikhil, Alexander Walker, Anthony Edwards. They have the same exact thing. Having multiple defenders that can guard big-time players in clutch moments, because you can rely on, hey, We need more speed. Throw Christian at the end of the half to finish. Hey, you know what? We need someone to body Anthony Edwards a little bit more. Throw KCP on him or throw AG on him. That's the versatility of this Denver Nuggets team. And I love the way we guarded the pick and roll today too. Pick and roll killed me the first two games. I talked about it. We switched every fucking thing.
If you get pick and roll to death, there is no worse thing as a basketball fan of a team. That's what I've learned the hard way, both calling games on the radio with Western and then watching some of these Nuggets games where you're like, guys, it's a pick and roll. Every single time it's a pick and roll. If you go with one guy, they're going to pass it to the other. You should know this better than I do. I know it's coming. You should see it's coming. Stop the damn pick and roll, please.
The rotations were perfect to you because they were not switching everything on every single thing. KCP was getting over picks. Obviously, Christian Brown, Michael Porter Jr., everyone was getting through picks. There was a couple times where switches where I hated it. But when you get through picks, the big man has to help on the pick and roll. And obviously, when you're facing Gobert, when you're facing Cat is more of a step-back guy, can knock threes in your face, and then Gobert will go to the rim. The rotation needs to come from the right person. It's not necessarily whoever's there. It's the right person. Because like I said, don't leave Naz Reid in the fucking corner. It's simple as that. If you have a shooter like Naz Reid, and look, I'm not comparing Naz Reid to Ray Allen or Reggie Miller, but Naz Reid can hit a wide-open three, plain and simple. I am begging Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Jaden McDaniels to consistently hit threes. That's where your second rotation comes from. And the Nuggets were very, very smart with how they rotated things defensively that I was very, very happy to see. And that's where the defensive collapse or offensive collapse for Minnesota came from. Because forcing shots, forcing, like I said, Gobert was non-existent tonight. Cat had that big second quarter and then was non-existent. Doing that just kills the morale of the team and gets you these massive leads and you're able to hold on to it.
I am going to let you have your final thoughts on the actual game itself, but the last topic that I'll introduce before we kind of wrap things up and I get into my Cowherd moment, legacy of MPJ. I think that we should probably talk about Michael Porter Jr. this playoff series as much as we can every single chance, because it is very impressive. I'll throw the Nuggets stats back up there, but he was the third leading scorer tonight. Jokic and Murray both had 24. He has 21. He's 4 of 5 from 3-point. So he's doing his job. The dude, I gave him a hard time at the beginning, and that's probably definitely unfair of me, and it's the media that I consume in Denver. I seem to listen to the sports station that wants everything now, right? Like, I need it. They've been doing this to the Broncos ever since Peyton Manning walked out the door. Like, you can't pick a quarterback. What are you doing? So it was probably all of that. But Michael Porter Jr. has turned into I don't know if he's the player that he once was when he was going to be the number one overall pick, but this is a damn good player that you've always needed throughout history in basketball. A guy that can shoot threes. You just mentioned guys that I can see the possibility of MPJ if he continues down this path being compared to the Reggie Millers, the Ray Allens, the guys that are clutch 3-point shooters, can defend the other side of the floor. But when you need a shot, you know who you're going to. Ray Allen made the shot to get the Miami Heat back in that situation for an NBA championship. So what do you think the legacy of MPJ is
well, right now? Let me talk on his game today first. I thought MPJ had a very quiet game. I did not obviously study the box score after every single made bucket tonight. But to see him score 21 points is accustomed to how hard he works. He was absolutely incredible tonight in facilitating other things. Like I said, the big thing for Mike has been, is he able to distribute the ball? Is he able to not just play ISO ball? And I'm telling you right now, when Michael Porter Jr. is shooting the ball the way he is, fuck it, I'll give him the green light whenever he wants. I'll give him the green light whenever he fucking wants. I'm not opposed. Sometimes, like I said, early in the fourth quarter, I was like, Mike, please don't shoot the ball with 4 seconds on the shot, like 4 seconds off of the shot clock. Slow the ball down, get the full 24, and he's pulling them. And I'm like, well, it went in, so how can I complain? And look, that's it's a whole other element, right? It's a whole other element because you know how deadly the two-man game is. You throw in KCP. If KCP and MPJ are able to hit knockdown shot after knockdown shot, that's life hell off defensively. Because you're like, fuck, well, I have to guard Mike out here. Well, I have to guard KCP. Your responsibilities turn into not just the pick and roll. It turns into everything. It turns into, okay, where does this need to come from? Who's out there? Should I guard AG? Should I not guard AG? Will he just hit three threes? Oh, he's gonna sit in the dunker spot and catch an alley-oop from Jokic when I send the double team. It's little things like that. And having Michael Porter Jr. out there, like I said, the kid he's not a kid. He's our fucking age. He's a year younger because I can't really call him a kid. Either way, he's had three back surgeries in 25 years of life. And the kid was supposed to be the number one pick coming out of college. Obviously, he had those back injuries, and that dropped him right into our hands. But to be patient with this guy and to be like, hey, you know what? We know who you are. We know that what you're capable of. You don't have to do that. If you want to do that on a nightly basis, great. That's an added bonus. But we need you to buy in defensively, buy in getting rebounds, buy in moving the ball, and you're going to win championships. Plain and simple. That's the championship culture this team has. And MPJ has fit it perfectly. Because like I said, a lot of guys that were the number one recruit coming out of high school and they have all these injuries and they drop to out of the lottery for a draft pick and they end up having to sit two full years before they get any run. That demoralizes a lot of guys. Just look at Bol Bol. Just look at guys like Taco Fall. Not Taco
Bones.
Fall.
Bones.
Like, if you don't buy into a culture, and MPJ has been so will-driven and been very, very essential to everything this team does, it's very, very hard to believe this team would be where it's at without him. So his legacy is, like I said, I don't know if one's going to get retired is all I'm going to say, because of how stingy the Denver Nuggets are with retiring jerseys. There's only five of them. The last person that was retired for this team played in 1993 the last time for us, and that was Dikembe. So it's been a very, very long time. But I guarantee you 15 for two reasons, unfortunately, and 27 will be up there. I don't know about one, because one's a little bit different, but 15 and 27 will be up there. But MPJ's legacy, he has much as Nuggets culture as anyone on this team.
Final thoughts on game three. What are we expecting into moving into game four? Because we'll do all basketball and then all hockey at the end. So predictions for game four coming up. If I'm doing my days correctly, Sunday night is the Nuggets game.
That sounds about right. I'm happy. I'm not satisfied because I know we're still down 2-1. You still lost two games at home. So now you still have one more game to make up, right? You still have one more game to make up. That's the attitude. You still have one more game to make up. You should not be satisfied getting back this series. Everyone knew this was going to be a series except some fucking idiots.
Except for Minnesota.
Except some idiots in Connecticut and some idiots from Minnesota is all I'm going to say. So now it's time to take that momentum that you had the first half and translate that again to the first half. Come out and punk them in the first half and you can win this game. It won't be a 27-point blowout like it is tonight. I expect a 5-9 point win for the Nuggets. But like I said, I do expect another win. This team responds. Minnesota has not faced a loss yet this season. This postseason. Let's not forget. They haven't lost in 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. First loss. How do you respond after getting your ass kicked? The Nuggets just responded the best you could ever do. Because you got your ass kicked at home. You got your ass handed to at home. You come back and you pay right back. That's a championship attitude. Is Minnesota ready for the big time? We'll see.
I have a thought, Nico. Go with me here for a second. Apparently, I'm just connected with the metaphors today. because this is not the one that I had planned, but I'll give you this. I'll give everybody this one for free. Think about 2 years ago, not 2 years ago, three years ago, when before the Avalanche won their Stanley Cup. We are the number one overall seed. It's the year after the bubble. We sweep Nashville. We go on to play Vegas in the second round, win both games at home. So it's a slightly different scenario, but we go 6-0 through the playoffs, lose game three. All of a sudden, not only do that was the weird year where both the Avalanche and the Nuggets got eliminated within the span of a week. It went bang, 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 sayonara, see you later, pack your shit, let's go to Cancun.
It felt like that we were on the verge of that this year. Is all I'm going to say.
It was this close. But now that's what you were just saying about the Timberwolves. Like, how are you going to bounce back from losing? You were on this winning streak. Do we have what it takes to come back? Like now that we've actually lost, like, I don't know. Maybe our shit does stink. Maybe it doesn't smell like roses in here after I fart or whatever the Timberwolves do in their locker room. It does make a little bit of sense when you think about it in that way. That's a good point to bring up.
And the adjustments that Malone has made from game one and two to the game three are massive, right? Because Chris Finch is obviously still has his injury. He's not the standing head coach. Obviously, he's the head coach. He runs through everything. But he has to sit down. He's not able to communicate as much as the guy who's able to stand up and talk the whole time. But either way, it's a game of chess, right? I'm sorry, Minnesota. You were not in checkmate after two games. May have thought you were, but the Nuggets said, you know what? You're going to do this. I'll do that. You do this. I'll do that. I'm going to do this. What are you going to do with that? Plain and simple. And that's how this whole series has gone. So like I said, I expect a closer game. But the first half that I saw tonight, specifically, please fucking replicate it every fucking time you said it before. Make my life so much easier. I was able to breathe. I was able to enjoy the game. I was able to scroll through Twitter and not fucking feel depressed about myself, about how this team is performing, especially and not having to come back from a massive deficit. Please continue having high energy from the start. Because like I said, when you play a full 48 minutes, there's very, very few teams on the planet that are better than you.
I think that the Nuggets now – This is your time. You gave yourself the opening. This is Drago getting cut in the corner. You heard him. He's not a machine. He's a man. I don't think that they were that scary, but that's what everybody was trying to build them up to be. So now that the armor has been pierced, you know where the weak spots are. Let's continue to attack those weak spots. Let's exploit this shit. We've said it. You need to go through the system of the NBA playoffs. It's really nice to think that you're going to be able to go from nothing to everything all at once. But normally it takes steps. You got to get there in stages. Are we ready for – I'm going to get my best radio guy voice on here, okay? This Nuggets and T-Wolves series is a mirror image of the Kendrick Lamar and Drake rap beef. Now, I know you're going to roll your eyes because you're probably not paying attention to any of this, but this is important to do because this is going to get us into the right channels on socials. So it's good to mention, at least talk about this a little bit. Just trying to throw it out there. So in this instance, obviously, I'm going to use the Nuggets as Kendrick Lamar, only in the fact of how things worked out. So Drake releases two diss tracks back-to-back, trying to knock him out. Nuggets lose two games at home, back-to-back. T-Wolves think that it's over. Drake says at the end of his second diss track, if anybody's calling this, they should already call it right. Like, you're not going to say anything. There's no reason for you to respond. We've beat you. You should just pack up your shit and go home. Kendrick drops Euphoria. Kendrick drops the 616. So now we'll see how game four goes. If game four goes well, I'm like, oh, I'm dead on the nose. Because at this point, we're like right at that time. The Nuggets were radio silent. They were just biding their time, collecting their information, making the beats, putting it all together. And then all of a sudden, ooh, well, I got to pull it. 117 and 90? Oh, I thought it was over. I'm not
standing on my chair spanking a team, okay, right now. There's a reason why I am calm, cool, collected, because I still know that Minnesota is a very, very good ball club. But it just blows my mind. It blows my mind that people have counted this team out after two fucking games. It really did. It really did.
Well, let's talk about the other team, and this one's going to be a little bit more difficult, unfortunately, to get through. Almost. I will say that almost. It's not a total loss because we both mentioned it. We said basically the same thing. I feel bad because we lost, But in the way that the game ended up, that third period showed if you would just focus, if you just focus, hey, focus, we're playing hockey here. Hey, come here, come on. Here, boy, here, boy. Let's play for these first 40 minutes here. If we play for these first 40 minutes, you guys can't play with us. All you just got to show up, man. Just show up and play hockey on the ice.
Play a full hockey game. Play a full hockey game. It scared the team shitless. I'll tell you what. It scared Dallas shitless.
They're still tweeting at us. They're still in our mentions, but I guarantee you they're sitting there like, because they were also saying it, like, because I go through. I'm not proud. I bookmarked every piece of hate mail that we've gotten from the Dallas Stars just because I don't know why. Don't ask me why. That's just how I am. They're saying, oh, he's bookmarking this. And then I'm just sitting there thinking, they're watching that third period like, well, shit, he's got everything already bookmarked. The Stars better be able to take care of this because this is not going to be fun if he's able to use these to his advantage. Final score ends up being 5-3 in this situation, so not necessarily the best outcome for the two of us. But let's talk about where things started. Miro Heiskanen gets the goal scoring going, and he was looking for a bounce back performance because it was very obvious he was not himself the other night in game one. He was tired. We talked about the defensive strategy with Ryan. They're still going with about five D-men. They did end up playing Nils Lundqvist a little bit.
They tried to make the Avs play with five D-men. We'll get to that here in a moment. Keep going. Keep going. We'll get to that here.
Okay. Where was I? Now I totally.
I'm Heiskanen. Heiskanen.
Heiskanen. Okay. So Heiskanen needed a bounce back performance. He's able to open up scoring. You end up in first period down 1-0. Not necessarily great, but like you could see. Let's figure something out. Yeah, Andre was the difference in the game.
He stole, and the Avs still scored three goals.
Yes, because in reality, it was a one-goal game when you had a goaltender in the net.
He had that save at the end of the first where I think it was Mikko had a chance on net, missed the puck, rebounded off, and then Val had a great chance to put it up. He wasn't able to lift it, and multiple opportunities, and like I said, Georgiev did not play bad by any means. Ones that were left in, and when you go down 5-on-3 more than once in a series, and you also make dumb penalties such as too many men on the ice, such as
twice. High sticking,
such as tripping,
flipping the puck out of your own zone. You hit the scoreboard
way too many times. I was
you hit the point. Scoreboard.
I was
and got delay a game.
It was mental, small mental mistakes, which is kind of rare to see from this team, which makes it feel better because, like I said, this hasn't happened ever.
It makes it feel better if it doesn't repeat itself.
It doesn't repeat itself exactly, and like those small mental errors this team made, like I said, you still fought, you still had your chances throughout the entire game to have opportunities, but when you shot yourself in the foot, bad things happen. Bad things happen, plain and simple. And it never felt as though that Dallas was just dominating the ice. It never did. Yeah, the shots were one-sided at one point, but it was like, fuck, we just did that again. Fuck, here comes another power play. Okay, it's wide open net up on the other side. Piet Roope hands on the scoreboard finally. It's things like that. I'm just like, come on, man. Like you know your goalie's not the best. Like, we're not sitting here. George has been good. He's not the best. You cannot shoot yourself in the foot consistently and hope to get back in the game. And somehow you did get back in the game. But the mental mistakes were obviously just a problem. And that's a good thing about this series. And we'll talk about the series in general after this game. But you still did what you were supposed to do. So it could be a lot worse.
No, and moving on into the second period. This is where the Stars end up scoring three goals, which they just return the favor of what the Avalanche did to them in having the big second period. But I think the first thing that we'll talk about, and I brought it up here, so let's get it going on the screen. You've already mentioned it. You threw me off. You almost made it so that I couldn't continue until we talked about it. But Jamie Benn, I was being facetious when we had Ryan on. Why does everybody hate Jamie Benn? And then he goes and pulls a stunt like this where they're going to show another angle of it, but I just, the amount of people telling me that this isn't dirty, and I, here's the one thing that I will give you is that he doesn't make contact with his head first, but he knows exactly what he's doing. You cannot look at me in the eyes and tell me Jamie Benn didn't time that perfectly to try and inflict as much damage and to hurt one of the top pairing defensemen for the Colorado Avalanche, because he is now nervous after game one. You cannot beat this team at full strength, so you have to resort to these cheap-ass plays. And one of them said, you can't see a guy coming. He can only skate 10 miles an hour. Jamie Benn knows that Devon Taves is not looking at the puck.
It's a defenseless receiver. Right, it's a whole conversation. Defensive receiver. I know he hit his shoulder first. That's not the problem here. The problem is when you have so many fucking concussion problems. The NHL has had Austin Matthews, Cale Makar. You can Sidney Crosby. These are the penalties. I don't care if he hit him in the shoulder. You have to call fucking something. That's plain and simple. I get it if you take away the major because him in the shoulder.
Yes.
But it's a defenseless. It's a defenseless defender.
It's a bare minimum two, defender. And it's a justifiable four.
It's a defenseless defender because, like I said, I know he hit him in the head, but plain and simple, I know he started with the shoulder, but plain and simple, he went right at him and took his head first.
That was the intent.
That was the intent to come right at him.
It was not to cause a hard hit to change momentum. It was not to try and jar the puck loose because nobody had possession of the puck. So all of these examples, all of these excuses that I'm getting thrown at and being called soft and, you want to take – it's hilarious. People are telling the two of us that we don't like violence in sports. We don't like contact in sports.
Well, we know it's a contact sport. All we're saying is – plain and simple, if that's the standard you want to set,
there's a lot of guys are going to
get a lot worse, going to get hurt a lot more.
There's a level of respect as a professional athlete. Like, you have rules that you follow. You don't intentionally try and alter somebody's health, because if you alter somebody's health, you're messing with their money, and that's not what this is about. Athletes is you're supposed to take care of each other. It's a brotherhood. You compete as hard as you can within the whistle, and we can talk about the NHL kind of with this same, because something similar happened with the Pastrnak and the Tkachuk fight where there's an extra blow thrown. Like, I get what these guys are trying to do. You're trying to get under the skin to be an agitator. There's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And if you want to do it the wrong way, I mean, we've had guys do it the wrong way for the Colorado Avalanche too. Like, Claude Lemieux is one of the biggest piles of human garbage if he was not playing for your team when he's skating on the ice. But damn it, he at least would stand up for himself.
If we, look, I'll just put it this way. If it was the other way around, Dallas Stars fans, what would your response be? If that was Wyatt Johnson, top guy for you, and Josh Manson came down and hit him in the shoulder, but you saw your guy face down on the ice, what would your response be? That's what I would say every single time. What would your response be? Yeah, I know. Don't fuck with Josh Manson's home.
Shout out Christian and Griffin at Tell It As It Is. You guys are you're some of my favorite post game content as well. I put you guys first in my podcast queue, which I hope everybody's doing with our show as well. But yeah, that was the funny thing. Like, Biz was trying to say that nobody could stand up to Benn. Like, they don't have Landeskog, and yes, Landeskog would be the perfect person to answer in this situation. But we don't need Landeskog. Benn, you cannot fight Landeskog if you cannot get past Josh Manson. That's the final boss. You have to beat levels to get to the final. You don't get to skip in line.
And the next thing is he fucking ran from the fights too after that. He ran from the fights too.
He's a bitch. He's a coward.
And look, like I said, if the roles were reversed, I would be sitting here and tell you, yeah, that was a penalty. I would be like, that was a dumb mistake at the back of the end when we had the lead. By the way, Dallas had the lead at that point. I was like, that's a dumb mistake to try to get the team in the ahead. Because at the same point, yeah, I understand physicality, but when it's a defenseless guy like that, I would have been irate. Especially because if that turned into a 4-minute major, which it should have been, and it would have been the opposite way around, where we hit a 1-goal lead and the Avs went and the Stars went on the power play, I would have been losing my fucking mind at the guy who did that. Play it simple. I'm going to lose my – why the fuck are you doing this? Play it simple. Play your fucking game. And that's the difference between us and Stars fans. I'll let you – it's plain and simple. That's all I'm going to say is if the roles are reversed, there's a big different response. There's a massive different response. And look, it's playoff hockey. Shit fucking happens. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. All I'm asking for is some player safety. Because my dad is, and I'm not going to go into all the details, but my dad has been met a lot of NHL players that he's helped with that have to wear glasses out inside and outside because of what bright lights do to them.
Yeah,
plain and simple. That's happened multiple players. If you want to have this big conversation on player safety with cutting down on fights, cutting down on injuries and everything, it starts with negating the fucking hits like that. Because, I know we hit him in the back, Stars fans. I'm well aware of that. It's a defenseless fucking receiver. Dallas, would you be mad if CeeDee Lamb came right down the middle and Minkah Fitzpatrick laid his ass on his fucking back, but it was a clean hit because he hit him in the shoulder first? No! It's a defenseless fucking receiver. That's the end of the conversation there. A defenseless receiver, plain and simple. I am aware he hit him in the shoulder, but the end result hit him in the head, and he's laid out on the ground, and he did not see him coming. What is the conversation about boarding, Jimmy? Because this ties in perfectly.
If you can't see his eyes, you can't hit him.
You can't hit him, plain and simple. Does that come into play here?
You teach your fourth graders that in lacrosse practice. If you can't see his eyes, don't cross-check him in the back.
It's not difficult.
No.
It's not difficult.
So you can't Jamie Benn knows what he's doing. He's intentionally trying to hurt players that he knows are going to – like, if we lose Devon Taves, you're not expecting a ton of goals from Devon Taves, but your defense will suffer to a point where you're like, fuck.
Everyone knows my thoughts on watching Caleb Jones skate out there for us. I'm already fucking sick and tired of him, okay?
I don't want to be Dallas and have to rotate five defensemen. I very much like having three, four true pairs of defensemen. And, yeah, you cannot tell me Jamie Benn did not know exactly what he was doing. Let's get back to the actual play of hockey and not talk about that human pile of garbage any more than we have to. Robe Hintz, Miro Heiskanen, and Tyler Seguin all get goals in the second period. I am not going to lie. I went down to my room. After this, I finished my lesson plans. My kids were like, wow, this is – we had a lot of notes today. I was like, yeah, I had a lot of time on my hands. Yeah. I had a lot of time on my hands to do some research while I was just like hate typing on my keyboard. Like, we're going to learn about this shit. Yeah, we're going to – I'm going to get this all done in 55 minutes. But those three, Mario Heiskanen gets two in the game. Tyler Seguin gets the shorthanded goal, which was a fucking backbreaker. That was the killer. It ended up being the nail in the coffin. But still afterwards, you're sitting there and you're like, well, God damn it. If the Avalanche get a few lucky breaks here, there's just a few plays go back and forth. We might have this thing. This might not be over.
It really did. And you got to a point where it's 4-1-3 and the Avs had the puck with the pulled goalie and a chance to score.
Yeah.
I that scares the team shitless. I don't care. Like you won. Hold on. I'm gonna be careful, very careful with my words, because like I said, I do not want to say the M word and say it was an MV, because it was not a moral something. But either way, you scared the team shitless. Plain and simple. Because you told them it doesn't matter if you're up by four goals. It doesn't matter if you're up by three goals. No lead is safe in the series.
Ask me who scored the goals for the Avalanche, by the way.
It was Val. I know Val had one.
Val scores in every single game. They didn't want to say it, but it was lucky that he ended up getting the goal. But they didn't want to say it. Ryan didn't want to say it from sarcastic remarks. But Val scores at a goal a game, more than a goal a game right now.
Yeah.
Brandon Duhaime and Joel Kiviranta.
Yeah.
What did we talk about all last year? What did we say was going to be an X factor in these playoffs? If you can get some depth scoring out of people that you do not expect, you know your big guys are going to kick. You got a goal out of that.
They haven't kicked yet.
And they have not had the game where they truly break through. But I will be fair to Dallas at this point and say they haven't had a game where their stars have really broke through. Like Wyatt Johnston, I don't think has more than a goal.
He's been very quiet. He had that one goal in game one, I think.
And Robertson is more worried about trying to draw high-sticking penalties than he is about trying to actually put the puck in the back of the net.
And then so
I think, Stars fans, if you want to start talking shit at somebody online, start talking shit at your – look in your own backyard before you start pointing fingers elsewhere, all right?
Yeah, and Robe Hintz also has not played very well. Ottinger has been the standout for this team, simple, and he's played very, very well in the series, and that's what's helped him. Like I said, the Avs cannot play from behind every game. I've said it with the Nuggets too. You start in deficits – and you just say, hey, fucking save us and take give three goals away or give two goal deficit away, you're not going to win the Stanley Cup. Plain simple. That's just not going to happen. You need to come out and like I said, now we come back home and the good thing is you stole one. You stole one. You stole one. Plain simple. You stole one. And when I say steal one, you snatch that bitch. You snatch that bitch because overtime. They had
there ain't overtime. No better. Yeah. There ain't no bit more. If it was double overtime, I guess then you could say it a little bit more. But you like you took you said, that. You were Happy bitch. Gilmore's girlfriend, and you were like, I'm gone.
Yeah, you're a sayonara. And to do that, and like I said, coming back home, it's going to be a different atmosphere. Obviously, everybody loses their mind about some home ices, and they haven't said shit about us, which is very, very funny to me still. But like I said, you get to come home ice, and you take care of business game three, and then you have a chance to make a statement game four, and then boom, worst case scenario, you can close it out at home in game six. That's the way you need to look at it, plain and simple. Because like I said, if you look at the other side of the fucking bracket in the Western Conference, Vancouver is handling fucking Edmonton. And you might want to get out of this series.
That was even worse. That was
actually no, they're in overtime. Oh, they're in overtime right now. My fault. They're in overtime.
But can we talk about game one of that series? Because everybody fell asleep before that thing was even over. And if you are not aware, the Vancouver Canucks came back down 4-0 and scored five goals in the last two periods to steal game one. And Edmonton, hockey fans are fucking crazy. I was listening to Chicklets, and I'm sure you listened to the same episode when they were talking about when Boston beat Vancouver in the Stanley Cup final. And then there was the riots, and they're trying to say, like, well, it wasn't hockey fans rioting. It was like, oh, yeah, there was just 20,000 pissed off Canadians in Boston for another reason. It wasn't the hockey game.
And there definitely was no Vancouver little whales on any of those shirts at all. Definitely not. Just normal.
They just people. All turned inside out. There's just a bunch of tags sticking up on the back. If you got a tag sticking up on the back of your neck, I know why you're pissed off. Yeah. I feel your pain. Did you have tickets to the game? Yep. I know. I saw you there.
I totally understand. But yeah, look, what's happening in the rest? Because look, New York's going to get out of the Carolina series faster than everyone thought. Florida.
You think that Baltimore is going to get fired?
No, he's not going to get fired. That team, I mean, maybe. Who knows? But that,
if they get swept again?
They didn't get swept. Last year, they lost in this conference final, so it's a little bit different.
No, but if you look at – But they got swept in that series, though.
I honestly checked out after we lost because the Nuggets were on a run, so I'll be completely honest with you there. So I don't remember if it was a sweep or whatever. But you look at the rest of the playoffs in the East, they're going to move by quick. Florida and New York are fucking destined for each other. Florida poured it on Boston tonight, poured it on game two. They are going to come out fucking clobbering them. That series will be done in five. And obviously New York's looking to finish that series at four. You need to get out of this. Plain simple. You need to get the fuck away from this. And you need to have that attitude. Because like I said, what did we say when we got to the Stanley Cup final against Tampa Bay? We had fresher legs. Tampa Bay had to go through, I think it was two game sevens. Maybe it was the first round of the last. I forgot what it was.
No, it was like.
I think it was
It was six, and then they swept the second round against Florida that year, and then it was, I think, seven.
Either way, they played a lot more. They played a lot more games than us. more games than us. So if you can get through these games and be as healthy as you can, like I said, getting Drouin back is huge. Getting some of these guys back, not getting Landy back. I know it's pipe dream. It's not happening. It's
pipe dream. But Drouin. I want Drouin.
Drouin can come back. You get these guys healthy back and you get out of series where we have weeks at a time, it's going to be massive. So that's why I'm looking to like I said, it's important to win two here, in my opinion. It's important to win two and just set the tone that you're not going to be able to come back from a 2-0 deficit like you did against Vegas. This is a different team. So setting the tone and sending a message to Dallas and sending a message to Edmonton / Vancouver that we're not going to be fucked around with is a very, very important thing coming back home.
I will say, too, I want to make sure that I remember to give them a shout-out. We just came from we're kind of wrapping things up here. The last time that the Avalanche went on a run, Roxy graduated undergrad. There was a second round. I think it was the first round, but we'll make it work. There was a playoff game at the same time. There was this playoff game the same day that Roxy graduated her undergrad. She is graduating her master's program tomorrow where the Avalanche are playing a playoff game. There's a lot of serendipitous connections that seem to be happening here. I like I said, I tried to – I'm comparing the Nuggets and D-Wolves to Drake and Kendrick, and it might work out in my favor. I might be setting myself up for a huge win moving forward, and I might be setting up myself a huge win moving forward as well. But I would want to make sure I give a shout-out to Roxy. Super proud of her. She's the first master's degree in the family. Oh, Dom was shortly right thereafter, but Roxy's the first one. And we're going to be able to celebrate her tomorrow. So I'm go down there, drink a little bit, and then watch the game before I drive home.
Absolutely. Everyone, like I said, this weekend is an important weekend. Hug your mothers. Hug your mother. Sunday is Mother's Day. We will not be live after Sunday. I've already told Jimmy this. That's not something either him or I want to do because we're both very big family men. We know that, okay? So we will not be live after game four for the Nuggets. So we'll be back live on Monday. But like I said, hug your mothers. It's very important to be there for them because, like I said, we would not be here without them. And if you like I said, some people have lost their mothers down the line or no longer can spend these days with them, enjoy it. Because like I said, I know I'm very, very thankful. I know Jimmy's very, very thankful. We wouldn't be, like I said, Jimmy and I would not be friends the way we are and have this many similarities and how we're conducted and how we're built. It wasn't for our two moms. So we're very, very thankful. And like I said, have a great Mother's Day for those all out there.
And I want to say too, like growing up, there was a few different people, there was a few different families and friends that we had where like I saw their moms as an extension to my mom, and your mom was definitely one of them. Absolutely. I know, I'm sure that
was the same. Absolutely.
And it was just because the people that they are. And I want to make sure that we mention that too. Like our moms are, our dads are pretty, they do a lot. Our dads are cool. The moms are the backbone. Everybody says it all the time, but they're like the gangsters in the family because my mom is the one that will get after your ass. Like I've been screamed at the top of her lungs in the middle of the playoffs. Like it wasn't even my fault. It was a lung snap and the holder missed it, but it went through his hands.
You have one job. What are you doing?
I was like, oh, that's just my mom. That's just my lovely mother. She's just encouraging me to do better the next time. But I truly do love, you know, your mom, and I do love my mom as well.
All across. Like I said, if you have your mom still with you, spend time with them, hug them. If you're a brand new mom, I know I have some friends that just had kids. I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Because like I said, those brand new moms, it's a beautiful thing when you become a mother and a father for the first time. Luckily, Jimmy and I are not there yet. But we got a little bit of time. But if you are a mother right now, enjoy, hug your little one, and husbands, be good to your wives.
Yeah. And by the way, recent guest of the podcast, Jordan Carls, they're going to be their first Mother's and Father's Day coming up. Absolutely. So they got a little 9-month-old. So big shout out to them. Thank you, everybody, tuning in live. We appreciate it. Be sure to subscribe on your way out. Hit the like button. Tell a friend about the podcast. Leave a 5-star rating and a review. Follow us at FEOTB Pod if you would so please. Enjoy our TikToks, us making a fool out of ourselves on the internet. We hope that we bring you some sort of joy and a knowledge. So with that, for myself, Jimmy Pilato, my co-host, Nico Bryant, we will see you guys Monday on the far end of the bench.
Peace.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.